Okay, so each year I try to pick a different part of the parsha to discuss Rashi's. So the famous parts of Vayetze have already been taken in previous years. So we're going to look at some of the less famous parts of Vayetze. The initial conversation between Yaakov and Lavan, it happens across many, many psukim and many waves. Yaakov wants to leave, Lavan delays. There's a very, very outsized amount of psukim dedicated to the sheep and to the sticks and to the shepherding methods, which is a different story. We're not going to talk about that. Just some of the initial conversation between Yaakov and Lavan. So first of all, what's the prompt? What catalyzes Yaakov that maybe this is the time to return? So the Torah says, "Vayhi kasher yolda Rachel es Yosef, vayomer Yaakov el Lavan shalcheni v'elcha el mekomi uliartzi." Yosef has been born, and somehow that prompts Yaakov to return. Why is Yosef's birth a prompt? Yaakov knew he'd have 12 children. Binyamin still isn't born. So if you tell me that the 12 children have already been born, now it's the time to return to Eretz Yisrael. But what about Yosef's birth is so symbolic to Yaakov? This is a signal he has to return. Well, you could have said that now each wife of his has a child. Maybe he wanted to stay with his father until every single one of his wives had a child and made it feel more comfortable for them to be at home. So maybe now that Rachel has a child, now he has the green light to return. But Rashi says something else. Yosef is always in Jewish history. Yosef is going to be the one, based on a pasuk in Ovadia. The Ovadia is a small sefer. Sefer Ovadia talks about the final wars between Yosef and Esav, and that Yosef will be a fire, and that Esav will be like straw. The lashon of the pasuk is V'haya beis Yaakov eish, ubeis Yosef lehava, ubeis Esav lekash. So Yosef will always have that role of warring with Esav. Esav's grandchildren, Amalek, Yeshua ben Nun, comes from Yosef. Shaul doesn't really come from Yosef, from the families, from Binyamin. So that family will always have its way with Esav. And this is where the legend, not the legend, but the Masorah of Mashiach ben Yosef emerges from. And there will be a prior Mashiach, not from Yehuda, but from Yosef, whose primary task will be to displace the wicked parts of Esav from their historical role. So once Yosef is born, Yaakov realizes that he has the ammunition to confront Esav, something that we don't think about in Vayetze, but pops up immediately in Vayishlach. Now, why is this an important Rashi? Because it's consistent with Yaakov's M.O. Yaakov's M.O., as we'll see in Vayishlach, is Ein Samchen El Anes. That even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu has delivered countless promises to him, and he's locked in those promises with deals, Aser Asrenu Lach, there's a difference between Emuna and Bitachon. Emuna is theological. You realize it's Hashgacha, you realize nothing's random, you realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the earth, you realize HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all the Ikari Emuna. Bitachon is, at a particular moment in life, do I have the right to trust Hashem rather than taking human steps? And you could say, I don't have the right to have bitachon now because I'm not a tzaddik, because the situation is too dicey, because maybe my averos kol Hashem yigra machet, as we see in next week's parsha, katonti mikol hachasadim, mikol ames asher sisis avdecha. David HaMelech says, asher adam mefachei tamid. When you don't have, people sometimes confuse the word bitachon and emuna. When we say bitachon, we really mean emuna. When you don't have bitachon, you're not lacking, you're not less of an oved Hashem. When you don't have bitachon, you're just saying maybe you have to be more cautious in this situation. So you think Yaakov should return to Eretz Yisrael regardless of whether Yosef is born, because Hashem has promised him protection. For the presence of Eretz Yisrael, he can face Esav. He's afraid to return to Eretz Yisrael. He's not prepared to return to Eretz Yisrael until Yosef's born, until he has that. And according to Chazal, Yosef still played an instrumental role. Even in the encounter next week's parsha, he protects Rachel. Esav has his eyes on Rachel. This is Chazal filling in that Yosef, even as a child, already has a role to protect his mother from Esav. So the Lashon of Rashi is, Mishanolad Esav, what Mishanolad Yosef. Once Yosef is born, Batach Yaakov Bakarish Baruch Hu V'ratzel Lashuv. This is a strange Rashi to read. He didn't have Bitachon beforehand. All of a sudden Yosef's born, Yaakov says, oh, now I know all the promises will come true. No, he knew they would come true, but he doesn't know whether he has the right to be Samech on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Avtachos without taking steps. Now that he has Yosef and he realizes Api Nevuah, Api Ruach HaKodesh, that Yosef will have a unique quality to offset Esav, so now he's prepared to say, you know what, I now have the right to have Bitachon, I can return now to Eretz Yisrael and encounter Esav. It's a very, very important Rashi. that highlights the difference between bitachon. Again, people say bitachon today, what they probably mean is either emunah, or in this particular context, I bitachon, even though I took measures, I'm not sure how it will turn out, but I bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch. It's very, very important. If you want to take some reading for Shabbos tomorrow, read Rav Lichtenstein's article on bitachon in By His Light. Very, very seminal article about bitachon and emunah. Okay, just literally the next pasuk. Let's just go pasuk by pasuk, Rashi by Rashi. So Yaakov makes his first attempt to secure his father-in-law's permission. Tanas Nashai. Let me have my wife, my children. This is Lavan. You've been here before. You know who he is. He swapped your wife. Stop being so kind. Stop being so respectful. Stop being so legal. Just go. And in the end, that's what happens. In the end, he has to leave in the middle of the night. He has to pack out on the tractor trailers in the cover of night. Rashi says, Eini rotze lases ki imbishus. Yaakov wants to take the high road. In the end, he can't. But ideally, he wants to take the high road, and this is called derech eretz. This is not called mitzvah. This is not mitzvah to consult with your swindling grandfather. It's not even called musr. Musr is moral. There's nothing moral about this here, because there's a swindler. This is just human convention. You don't just leave before you say goodbye to someone. You don't just walk out on someone. Moshe Rabbeinu has the entire Jewish people, 3 million people, being enslaved, possibly being killed day by day, and Hashem tells him to go back to Paro and try to release the Jewish people. What does he do? First, I got to go back to my father-in-law. Vayashav al Yasser Chosnan, if they ask him permission. So it's about Derech Eretz, even which is a level beyond Midos and Musar. Just what is human convention? How do you act in public politely? Do you show deference to people? It's even more than Musar. Musar is moral question. Sometimes Derech Eretz isn't moral. It's just polite. It's just acting in human convention. We think Derech Eretz shouldn't govern Talmid HaChacham because we live in the heavens. We're beyond Derech Eretz. We're governed by Halacha. We're governed by Musar, objective Musar. But when human beings create cultural expectations and cultural norms, we're expected to behave by those norms. Even if you're a tzaddik, even if you're Yaakov, and even if Jewish history is waiting. It's about, in a practical sense, don't ever leave somewhere before you say goodbye to someone. You forget that when you're young. You know, don't ever leave yeshiva before you say goodbye to your rebbes. So make sure you say goodbye to people when you leave the house. Simply say goodbye, come in the house, go out of the house, say goodbye, greet people. It's also about sometimes you don't have the ability to sustain that type of behavior, because in the end, it turns out Yaakov does have to leave in the middle of the night. So at a certain point, Derech Eretz runs out. And Derech Eretz is an ideal, but it's not the only ideal. And the greatest errors people make in life is when they take one ideal and they establish it as the absolute ideal to the exclusion of all others. Today is Thanksgiving. A lot of people in America are celebrating Thanksgiving. People are celebrating many, many layers to Thanksgiving, but part of the layers is to be thankful for democracy, thankful for this form of government. Democracy is a perfect example of a partial truth to become an absolute truth. Democracy is the best form of government that human beings have been able to craft. And we're thankful to Hashem for giving us the political spark and political imagination to create democracy after hundreds of thousands of years, not hundreds of thousands, hundreds or thousands of years of despotic abuse through monarchs. But democracy has many, many flaws politically, technically, morally, existentially, many flaws. And it can't be that democracy is held up as deified. Alas, sometimes in a conversation of competing values, you can't be undemocratic. There may be times to be undemocratic, very far and few between, and be very careful, but maybe there are other values that should override them. Let's just give you an example of something I don't believe in, but just how the conversation is just so stilted, rather. We can have a problem in Israel if we don't solve the Palestinian issue, because, I mean, let's say for argument's sake you felt that absorbing the Palestinians into the state of Israel was the better solution. Let's say that would be your goal. Militarily, to provide better security. Let's take that line of argument. And your only concern is, well, then we can't let them vote because we want this to be a Jewish state, and not letting every citizen vote would be undemocratic. Okay. So maybe we shouldn't have a democracy in Israel. Maybe we should have a different type of political system which protects the rights of everyone, but isn't democratic at its core. I'm not saying I believe in that. I think we should be a democracy. But the conversation shouldn't stop there. Undemocratic can't be a conversation stopper. If, let's say, you could save hundreds of thousands of lives, there'd be no war in the whole Middle East, and right, many of the countries we're signing peace accords with right now are not democratic. So you say, oh, they're not democratic, we won't sign accords with them. It's in the greater interest of public welfare to sign accords with non-democratic peoples, because you can create peace and you create a bloc against Iran. So we're not getting into politics right now. But the greatest dangers are when you take one value and you fix it as the ultimate only value. The only thing which is the ultimate only overriding value is Torah. Every other value is a value amongst values, and it has to be calculated within the overall equation or calculus of values. So here you see Yaakov striving to have Derech Eretz, but in the end, Eretz Yisrael is waiting, Jewish history is waiting. He can't secure Lavan's permission. It's not going to be elegant. It's not going to be smooth. He has to leave in the middle of the night. How many Rashis have we talked about so far? Two. Yeah, like six, but just talk one. Just the next Rashi. Nichashti, I realized, Lavan says, through my Nichosh, that I've received all this bracha of Ayvracheni Hashem Biglalecha. So two interesting parts of the pasuk, one of which Rashi comments on, one of which he doesn't comment on. One is that Lavan is talking, he's saying Hashem's name. This isn't the first time Lavan's saying Hashem's name. This isn't the last time he's saying Hashem's name. He said Hashem's name when he dispatched Rivka in Parshat Chayisara. He says Hashem's name now. He has a dream with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So evidently, Yaakov's time spent in Aram Narayim promulgated presence of Hashem. Again, you always have to be sensitive and Sefer Bereishis for all the interactions with our Avos and foreigners, whether it's in Eretz Yisrael, they come to Israel, Malki Tzedek, Abimelech, the kings, Aner Eshkol Mamre, people of Hebron, or international, in this case, Lavan and his crew. The goal of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov is to spread the name of Hashem. The name of Hashem is spreading literally. Lavan has become, he's immoral, but he's semi-religious. He's attributing it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, his religion is laced with magic and sorcery. Nichashti vayirachin Hashem biglalecha. In the ancient world, people felt very vulnerable. They felt the need to try to understand the future through magic. They didn't have science. We can predict our future. They needed magic. Magic was true. Magic is not just tricks. There's real sorcery. There's real wizardry. We don't have it in our world anymore. It's called Nichosh. Try to find the future through Nichosh. The classical champion Menachesh was Bilam. We'll see this face-off between Nichosh and prophecy in Mirat Hashem again in Balak. But you're seeing an early prequel for the face-off between Yaakov, who receives his information directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is one of the basics of monotheism. One of the basic ideas of monotheism that Hashem speaks to human beings directly, even though he's unknowable and he's transcendent. He speaks to us and he spoke to us at Har Sinai. He spoke to Avram, he spoke to Yitzchak, he spoke to Yaakov. He didn't speak to Lavan. He came to Lavan in a dream and warned him against Yaakov. Lavan's only access to the future is Nichosh. Nichashti vayirachein Hashem biglalecha. We'll see this again in Mitzrayim. So you have to trace the unfolding difference between prophecy and sorcery and wizardry as it takes place in the end of Sefer Bereishis. Two different systems, and of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the Avos is trying to present the monotheistic system. Just one more Rashi. The Rashi is Liragli. When Yaakov says, Yaakov defends himself. I worked hard for you. I had very little when I came. So this is Lavan talking. I'm sorry, this is Yaakov talking. So Yaakov saying, you're right. Hashem blessed you because of me. He uses a very interesting word. Vayivarech Hashem oscha liragli. Lavan's word is biglalecha, vayivarechini Hashem biglalecha, vayivarech Hashem oscha liragli, Yaakov responds. Why does he use the word liragli? What does ragli mean? So Rashi says, when I came here with my feet, imragli, bishvil bias ragli, when I came here with my feet, you received bracha. Why is he saying that? He's emphasizing that unlike the last time Lavan received bracha, how did Lavan receive bracha the last time? Not through the feet of the Jew who came, but through the camels of the Jew who came. Because Avram's Eved brought a lot of camels laden with riches. Yaakov comes empty-handed. He comes literally with his regal, only with his own 2 feet. And he delivers bracha, not because he delivers wealth, but because he just stays with Lavan. 2 different templates for when people receive the welfare of Jews. Whenever Jews live in a country, that country is enriched. That country receives welfare. That country skyrockets. Always been true. When Rome hosts the Jews, even though Rome persecutes the Jews, to the height of the Roman Empire. When Mitzrayim hosts the Jews, to the height of the Egyptian Empire. That's why we're not allowed to go to war. We're not allowed to despise. Let the Saiv Mitzri, let the Saiv Edom, because Mitzrayim hosted us. Why? They hosted us, they enslaved us, but they still hosted us. So any country that hosts Jews, their fortunes rise. Sometimes their fortune rise because the Jews actually contribute. Science, culture, in Parshas Chayisara, we contributed. We bought riches, metaphorically. Sometimes the countries rise just simply because they open their doors to Jews and they host Jews as Lavan hosted Yaakov. Yaakov didn't deliver through his own riches. He became rich in Lavan's house, but Lavan became rich alongside of Yaakov through Lavan's work. So it's really important to think about Thanksgiving and the fact that America threw its doors open for Jews over the last 275 years, and Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has awarded the American people with unprecedented abundance and surplus, literally, even though the Jews came empty and penniless to America. So some very interesting Rashis to think about, some of them connecting to Thanksgiving, some not. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Those who are celebrating Thanksgiving, do it the right way, proper proportion, both practically and mentally. Good values, but not the only values. I'll send you my article from the Jerusalem Post the day before it comes out about not making all religion into Thanksgiving. But okay, have a good day.